How you doing, Kyle?
Hey, I'm doing great. Ahmed, how you doing today?
Good, buddy. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, my pleasure. Good to be chatting.
I really appreciate it. So, you know, for those of you out there who may not know, Kyle is a prolific blogger, businessman extraordinaire as well. He's probably one of the most humble people I know in the entire watch industry. I think Kyle and I started around the same time, almost 6 years ago, and we had very different paths. Kyle, can you kind of enlighten my listeners and let them know kind of like what got you into the watch business, why watches, and, you know, what kind of prompted you to want to, you know, dedicate a site, if you will, to this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and thanks for the kind introduction. I really started Perpetuelle, I guess it was around the 2009-2010 time frame, and I've been basically a lifelong watch guy, if you will. I really started out with some Swatch watches that I got when I was, you know, in middle school, and just kind of became fascinated with watches from a design perspective, and then gradually that evolved into a greater appreciation for the mechanics and an interest in the mechanical aspect of watches and watchmaking. So it's always a passion I've had. Really, Perpetuelle is kind of born out of a couple ideas. I mean, I originally started the site. I had a forum on the site, and I was going to try and create and do a little bit on the e-commerce side with a marketplace, but I didn't get any traction with that, so I kind of switched to blogging. And part of what started that was I'm always interested in what's the latest and greatest out there. I always love just seeing what are the new watches, what's great out there. And at the time, I just didn't see a lot of blogs who I felt were offering that. So I just said, well, I'm just going to do it myself. And I started blogging, and my goal was I'd blog about one watch each day, or maybe a little bit more than that, depending on what was going on. And slowly I built up relationships with the brands, and it's really turned into something fantastic. But really, it's a labor of love for me, born out of my love for watches. And I love sharing the latest and greatest luxury and avant-garde timepieces with other people who enjoy watches as well. So that's really what I am doing with Perpetuelle now, and that's what I'm focused on. And so it's a lot of fun.
That's really interesting that you start, that what got you into it started with Swatch, because, you know, I remember that's how I got into it as well. I mean, they were affordable, they were plastic, you know, they were really innovative in design, they were really kind of like avant-garde for their time, and, you know, it was fun. I mean, it was accessible. And that accessibility, I think, translated into probably you wanting to dig deeper, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because you think about a Swatch watch. I mean, it's about as simple as you can get, and they come in all sorts of funky designs and colors, and it's obviously a quartz powered watch. But yeah, I mean that's where it started, and so yeah.
I mean, I remember going, Kyle, into stores and stuff, and like, you know. You know, it was like only one Swatch per customer. This was like in the late 80s and early 90s. And it was, it became really fad. Like it became, I mean, let's face it, they're expressions of people's personalities as well. And that's what makes them really cool. It definitely, like, I know a lot of cool, interesting things were born out of Swatch. And for those of you who don't know, Swatch, if it weren't for Swatch, there would be no Swiss watch industry at all today. Mm-hmm. They're really the ones who kind of pioneered making Swiss watches accessible with Swatch, and then today they own like Blancpain, Breguet, Swatch, Tissot, Hamilton, Longines, and Omega, and all those great brands. But besides giving the Swatch group a plug, do you feel that, you know, Perpetuelle today is kind of, did you ever think it would be where it is today? I mean, you've got thousands and thousands of people looking at this monthly, and
yeah, when you're doing something that you really like, it's you find other people who are able to relate to it and share in your passion. It's kind of icing on the cake. And I guess what I've realized is, you know, a lot of people out there are hungry for and interested in watches, of course. And, you know, having gone from Swatch, which is basically more of a pop culture type of thing, to, you know, all I focus on is the very high-end brands and almost 99% exclusively mechanical watches and high watchmaking, basically. I never knew where it would go. I mean, it's still, I'm on that path, basically, and it just continues, the site continues to grow, my audience continues to grow, and I think that part of what I try to do is just bring authenticity to the site, and when I blog about a new watch, I try to add my own element of my opinion and my views on the watch, and generally speaking, I try and focus on the positive. And which, you know, the converse of that is if you're not getting written about in Perpetuel, it's just probably because I don't like your watches, you know. So, but I just try and focus on the positive. And I've been growing. I'm continuing. The site's continuing to grow. And for me, though, I've always said if this ever starts to feel like work as opposed to something that I'm doing for fun and I really enjoy doing, then I'm going to reassess it because it started out as a passion, and I really always wanted to have that authenticity where it's not like I feel like this is a business for me or something I have to do. It's something I want to do, and I think that that probably helps, and that probably comes through in the content that I write as far as people being able to relate to it and not feeling like there are you know, I'm trying to push a certain angle or a certain viewpoint. You know, I'm just sharing my opinions as a one individual watch enthusiast out there, and that I think that's what's resonating with people.
That's really cool, and I think that's very important, Kyle. That's a very important thing you just said, because you know, when you kind of do things that are contrived and you force it on people, it comes across definitely in writing. And I think you're one of the few people in the industry who I actually respect, you know, like you're not full of yourself, and you have a great understanding. I think you've learned a lot in the last 5 years about the industry and the way it works. And
yeah,
are there any bloggers or anyone in the blogosphere that, you know, inspire you or that you've taken notice of their writing or their blogs? Or
I started out, of course, I was followed some of the old the forum websites, Time Zone and Watch You Seek, and I just wasn't finding the kind of information there that I wanted, and so I did early on follow some of the blogs. I mean, there's a handful of guys that are are dedicated to it, and I follow guys like ProfessionalWatches.com, Hodinkee.com. There's another fellow out of Europe. Who runs a site, FratelloWatches.com. He's actually been blogging. Him and the guy at ProfessionalWatches.com have been blogging forever. And so I read all those guys' blogs. It's, as you know, being also a blogger yourself, it's a small community for those of us who are truly dedicated to it. And so I like to read what other guys are doing, and, you know, they're getting hands-on looks at stuff maybe that I'm not, or vice versa. And so those are some of the guys that I started out reading and continue to read, and so again, it's just another thing where I enjoy sharing in their passion, and they're all pretty much grassroots guys who are I'm just out there doing what writing about watches they love as well. So they're great authentic sites, and you know, it's a great little community, if you will, to be a part of.
Now, do you find that there's a lot of, like, I know in a lot of these blogs, I mean, that's why I kind of myself have stayed away from forums, but do you kind of find, like, there's a lot of, like, hazing or bullying that goes on these things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I didn't mean to cut you off. I find a lot more of that on the forums, where the forums are, they're less authoritative, in my view. And it's funny because you've even seen sites like Time Zone and Watch You Seek, which are probably the two biggest forums. They've started their own blogs, which is kind of funny. It just shows you how the blog over the last 5 or 10 years, even longer than that, if you look just at all of technology. But in the watchmaking sector, the blog has really emerged over the last 5 to 10 years as a major force in digital media. And with the forums, it's a little messier, if you will, because anybody can create a new discussion thread. Anybody can post content. Whereas with a blog, you basically have one person who controls the content, who is the editor or whatever type of role they see themselves in. So, and of course, other people are able to comment on those articles, but people can't guide the discussion like on a forum. You can post anything, and there tends to be more anonymity, and it just gets a little more juvenile sometimes. You have to deal with spam and just immature people. That's kind of what you see on the forums, and that's why it's, you know, some of those sites have a reputation for being very heavy-handed in terms of how they have moderators, and the moderators kind of control the discussion flow. And it's just much different with a blog. I use the Discuss commenting system, DISQUS, which is great. And, you know, you're still able to interact with your users, with your readers, and join in the discussion. But it's just a much different feel than the forums. And same thing, too, like with social media. I'm probably getting a little off topic here, but, you know, I leverage social media a lot, whereas on the forums they tend to be very closed. You know, they're closed in, and they don't tend to leverage that as much. So that's kind of what I'd say about that.
I mean, do you feel, Kyle, there's a lot of – I mean, look, I grew up in the watch industry, so for me it's really interesting to see so many different people from so many different walks of life all over the world get involved in the watch industry and become journalists or become bloggers or become authoritative. I don't know many people who have the perspective I have in the industry, it definitely makes it interesting for me to see it from a lover of watches myself, but also from, you know, like anyone today can start a blog and they're taken seriously.
Right.
And that's what makes this world really interesting and dangerous at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great point you raise. And, you know, I've seen many, many, many blogs come and go in the 5 or 6 years since I've been blogging. It really does. Eventually, I think people are weeded out. If you're not truly passionate about it and you can't generate, you know, regular and good content. But to your point about kind of perspective, it's really interesting because if you look at myself or any of the, some of the other guys I mentioned earlier, you know, we've all come at it from the point of view as a blogger, not having worked in the industry. Hey, we're just watch guys and we want to share our thoughts and opinions. And so certainly there is that mindset with bloggers. I don't think there's a lot of bloggers, I can't think of any, who have actually worked in the watch industry and have that perspective. So there's definitely and you learn more about the industry, of course, but coming, for example, like yourself, having been involved in the industry and on the retail side of things, you have, I think, a much keener, deeper understanding of some of the inner workings of the industry that are valuable to be able to bring to a blog or something like that. And, you know, I've been able to learn some of those things from you over the years. And it definitely helps with perspective because, like you say, it's easy to throw up a blog and get a press release and, hey, I'm just going to reword the press release and make it look like my own thoughts and try and get taken seriously. But, you know, you really got to have more depth than that. And I think that the truly dedicated bloggers and those that are sustaining themselves and thriving have shown and taken the extra initiative to understand more about the industry. And but I think there is still a need and room for a lot more of that, where as opposed to just being a journalist and that's all you've been, you know, really having a deeper understanding of the industry from another point of view, like yours, for example.
You're very kind for your words. I appreciate that. I myself learn every day, and I love it. And I love talking to people like you because, you know, you're a real guy. Like, you know, you're not relying on this for income. This is not, you know, this is not your business. I mean, it's becoming a business, but it's not sort of what you rely on for your daily bread, if you will. And that's what makes it even more interesting. I know there are a lot of, you know, I give props to people out there as well. I mean, I think, I don't even know what Hodinkee really means, but I do know that he's done a phenomenal job with coming from the banking and the journalistic world and taking the world by storm. I think all the watch companies love him. But, you know, it's like, it's really cool. I mean, I too love the social media aspect. I mean, as you've seen, I'm doing a lot more videos, and I think it's nice to, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know how you feel, but, you know, you must feel great when you get that, you know, that one topic that you want to discuss that maybe, you know, you haven't seen on another site or another blog, and you're like, you know what, I want to write about this, and it doesn't matter. I don't care if people respond or not, but when they do, and it's positive, and you get great feedback, don't you feel like there's not a better feeling in the world? It's like,
yeah, yeah, 100%. I hear what you're saying. It's funny because a lot of times, that's where the magic is. Where if you know you see a topic or a certain point of view or something that you haven't read out there before, and you have a strong opinion about for a particular topic or a particular watch or something, and you know you put it out there. A lot of times that really can generate a lot of interest and engagement from the audience because that's what people are looking for. You know, they want honest, unbiased, kind of independent, forthright opinions, and I think that's an important thing to what you have to do to be successful over the long term, just as far as being able to resonate with your audience. And to me, it all kind of goes back to authenticity. And that carries through to engaging with readers who aren't commenting on your blog itself, but maybe on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it would be. But it really comes back to authenticity and putting a unique perspective out there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it was great seeing you when you were in Vegas a few months back, and meeting you and your wife. That was, I mean, we've talked many times over the last six years, but to actually meet you, it's kind of like it's almost in a way like you know, it's like meeting that person you may see on TV a lot or something. It's that's how it felt like, and it was really cool. I'm glad we got to do it, man, and I hope we get to do it again. And I know before you came with your wife on a personal trip, you were out here for, I think you were out here for Jaeger LeCoultre, right?
Yeah, I was out. I was fortunate to be able to come out for a product launch they did earlier this year. I forget the exact timing. I think it was in February or March. I don't remember actually, but yeah, they launched a new QP, perpetual calendar, in their Master Ultra Thin line, and so they have a fantastic boutique at the shops there at the Wynn, and so they did a nice little event, had some media out there, myself included, to cover it, and it was really I was very appreciative to be a part of that, and it was great. So yeah, there's. Las Vegas, more broadly speaking, is an amazing spot for watches.
It is. It is. And, it's becoming a hub. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Richard Mille is going to open really soon. I think in November. They've got a store coming up at Crystals. I know that the Tourbillon boutique at Crystals that houses most of the Swatch Group brands that I'd mentioned earlier, they're moving from a 1,500 square foot store to almost 6,000 square feet across the way from where they are. It just shows you the power of watches, man, considering I'm sure you've also, you know, through this journey that, if you will, of watches that you're writing about, I'm sure you're also learning about, you know, the economy as well with watches, because I think, like, I don't know about you, but I definitely see it differently than most people when I'm seeing all these brands popping up and we're still arguably in a recession.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and that's where I wish I had more perspective from being in the industry, and like, I think your perspective in particular is valuable in that regard, because like I said earlier, it's very easy to just criticize a watch from an aesthetic point of view, good or bad or whatever. But there's definitely a lot to the business, the economics of watchmaking, from everything from running a brand up to the boutique, the distributors, not up to the boutique level. And that's a whole nother element that's really interesting. And then, of course, you have the secondary market with the auction houses and all that as well. So it is really interesting. And like the watch that Jaeger introduced, this perpetual calendar in stainless steel. I mean, it's I think that was about a $20,000 watch, and that was, you know, almost unheard of for a perpetual calendar. But it's a very strategic, business-minded decision, not to mention being a beautiful watch, where they were able to, they saw an unmet need in the market at a certain price point for a certain, what's typically a very, very high-end elite complication.
But that's not new to Jaeger, because they did that with the Tourbillon about 5 years ago, remember? When they introduced a Tourbillon for like $30,000 in steel?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you're right. And I raise that only in context of saying that, you know, there's more to just looking at a watch and, you know, saying, does it look pretty or not pretty? It's like, hey, there's what also is kind of the impetus for maybe why this watch is being released. And that's where it helps to have some of the experience like you have and insights as well, being from the other side of the industry as opposed to just being a media person strictly.
No, I appreciate that. I think that, Kyle, I'm really impressed as well. I mean, this is the first year you went to Basel too. That must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. I was really, really excited for that. Of course, it had been on my wish list for a number of years, and it just had never made sense for me to go, or the timing wasn't right or whatever. So yeah, I went for the first time, and of course went as a press person. It was fantastic. I mean, they had the new Basel hall this year. So there's a lot of new stands, as they call them, but they're more like buildings within a building. And so a lot of the brands were unveiling that, and it was just a phenomenal, fantastic experience, and I'm really excited to go back in future years. And maybe we can hook up one of these years and do that trip together.
You know, that would be amazing. I think that would be a dream. And for those of you who don't know, Basel World is the, you know, Oscars, if you will, of watches, of the new releases that come out every year in March and April in Basel, Switzerland. And to be invited as a member of the press, the public can go. They can purchase tickets and they can go. They can't go into the booths, but they can walk the show. They totally redesigned the entire thing. It's just halls and halls and halls of watches. And it's a huge honor that Kyle was able to go as a member of the press. I'm really happy for you, man. You deserve every bit of it. What about like SIHH? Like, that comes in January. Do you have any plans to do that? Or
yeah, I'd like to. I was in some discussions about doing that earlier this year. That's, I would say, even more prestigious.
Yes, it is.
Than Basel, and that is strictly invite only for the. It's not even open to the general public, so you have to be invited. Either, I guess, retailers go to that as well, right?
Yep.
Okay,
SIHH, for those of you who don't know, is. It's very exclusive, as Kyle said. It's Richemont-based, meaning that all the Richemont brands show there, like Panerai and Jaeger and Lange and, you know, all of the Richemont brands, Mont Blanc and Dunhill and, you know, all of them, Cartier. I agree. I mean, I've been to Geneva many times at SIHH, and it really is. It's really luxury all the way. It's really, it's really like you go there and you just want, even if you're not a watch guy, you just want to sit there and drink champagne and eat little,
right,
little finger foods all day long.
Yeah.
When you get back, you're either completely wasted and full and bloated, or you're super amped from like having 30 espressos. It's definitely an interesting thing, and I hope you get to go. How do you feel, man? I mean, you know, I don't know about you, Kyle, but I have not been able to get Tudor out of my head. It's super, super, super exciting for me because as someone who's in retail, who sold Rolex, who had an introduction to Tudor, who saw Tudor in the U.S. before it got discontinued 20 years ago, you know, and seeing that affiliation with Tiger Woods, with the Tiger Tudor and, you know, the concept of it and all that. And then to see it, you know, making its way back. I started writing about Tudor about 3 or 4 years ago, and I knew they were going to come back to the U.S. They were discontinued for the last 20 years. They've been available in Asia and Canada and the rest of Europe, but they're making their debut back in September of 2013. I mean, it's a Rolex subsidiary brand. I think they're going to own the $3,000 to $5,000 price point that's been definitely been abandoned or overlooked by the higher end brands. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm really excited. First of all, for Tudor to be coming back to the U.S. I don't have the depth of insight or the history with them having been here before and all that. Like you. Have that perspective, but my short view is, and I'll say also up front, I'm not a big Rolex guy at all. So I don't cover a lot of Rolex.
Is that from an aesthetics point of view, or is that from a
I just don't like the brand. Just doesn't get me going very much, you know. I'm really into Rolex. I find that you tend to be either you like Rolex or you don't, and it's such a big brand, and the whole vintage Rolex area is such a huge subculture, and it's just an area where I've never had the passion to throw myself into. And so, knowing I'm not a big Rolex guy, I can say I'm pretty passionate and enthusiastic about Tudor because they seem to be a little more aggressive, if you will, a little more forward thinking with their designs. You know, Rolex is very, very incremental in how they
traditional.
Very traditional, very conservative in how they evolve their product line. And Tudor's done some fantastic heritage pieces that they brought back for the past couple of years. Yeah, putting them on, you know, colored NATO straps that match the dial and stuff like that you would never see from Rolex. So I just think that Tudor's a really exciting brand. As you mentioned, I think in your last video I saw on the titanium Pelago was the price point. You know, they're going to be priced beautifully for the U.S. market. I think as a lot of the brands have moved up market, there's definitely a sweet spot that the Tudor can go after too, is in the price point. You know, kind of your entry level. You know, your first real nice mechanical luxury watch for, you know, $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. So there's just a lot of excitement around it, and for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's a return to intra luxury, and that's something that's exciting. I mean, I can tell you, somebody who was one of the few people in the country to be around when Panerai was first launched from a retail perspective. And I remember when the president of Panerai, who's now the president of Jaeger, you know, Philippe Bonnet, I remember when he was, you know, at that time, the president of Panerai, and he walked in, and I had just done a little bit of, you know, research on Panerai at that time. The internet wasn't as rampant as it is now. So, you know, you had to look at magazines to reference certain styles or ads or things like that. You couldn't just Google it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's amazing. That was in 2002. And I just remember looking at Philippe and saying, I think I saw an ad for a radio mirror or something, and I was like, there's got to be some sort of history between Rolex and Panerai. And he looked at me with, like, you know, like this pale face, and he was just like, I can't believe you could even see that, because not many people even realized that there was, you know, definitely a history between Panerai and Rolex. Yeah. And you know, that's the cool thing about, you know, like when Panerai came out, I mean, I just remember them being so accessible. $3,000 to $5,000 at that time was expensive, but it was attainable. It was totally attainable. And I just remember after getting the line ourselves in the retail store that I was working in, 3 weeks later, I had a Panerai watch on my wrist that I purchased. So I was like, wow, this is really attainable. And it was like, you know, it was almost like really, really expensive Happy Meals. You know what I mean? Like, you could collect them all, you know? And
yeah.
And it was fun and it was exciting and you saw these things hold their value and you saw the excitement built around it and the campaign and the brand building and working with President Clinton, who, you know, he liking Panerai and all these cool things. And now I'm seeing this again with Tudor and it feels exactly the same. And it's very, very exciting. Do you feel like, you know, Kyle, like with regards to, you know, your site Perpetual, do you feel like, you know, your viewership, do you think they're more into collecting watches or do you think they're more into talking about watches? Because those are two different things altogether.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great question. I think it's a little different for me to quantify that, but I think there's a mix of that, a mix of both. I think with Perpetual, I focus exclusively on the what I call the luxury and avant-garde timepiece segments. So your Tag Heuers, Breitling, stuff like that. I mean, that's kind of the low on the totem pole, and then it goes up from there. So I focus on, you know, stuff that is not everybody in the world certainly is buying.
Like the Erworks and the MB&Fs and the...
Yeah, on up to those real high-end independents. And then you've got guys like, you know, you've got Patek. I think it's a mix of both, and part of what I'm glad to cater to both as well. You know, having those aspirational guys who one day that's what's going to be in their collection or on their wrist, and then, you know, the other guys who already are buying or, you know, had experience buying these watches or have a multi-piece collection. Those guys are really fun to engage with as far as trading opinions on various pieces and stuff like that because, you know, they own these watches or they've decided whether or not they want to buy them. So it's a mix and it's a good mix.
Do you find now, does this help you, like, in terms of, you know, like, would you ever do get-togethers with these collectors? Have you ever kind of spent time with these people in a setting where they can all just geek out?
I'm located in the Denver market, so it's not the hugest watch area. And so that's part of the driver there. But who knows where the future will go. But, yeah, it's probably not in the cards for me right now.
And what about, like, do you find that, you know, like... Would you ever, if you ever got offered, like, to sell Perpetual, do you think you would? Or do you think you just want to keep this as a labor of love? And
Oh, man. I don't know that I would sell it. I'd be really surprised. You never know, I guess. Never say never about the future of someone even wanting to buy the site. But, yeah, for me, it's, you know, this is my reflections on... you know, this is a big piece of who I am and, you know, my hobby, my passions, if you will. So it's reflections on me as a person. And, I don't think I'd ever let go of it. You know, I don't ever anticipate, stopping what I'm doing and, it's just going to continue to carry on. And, so I think Perpetual is always going to be mine. And I've got another writer that I work with on an occasional basis, a guy by the name of James Bond out of Boston. And, you know, hopefully there'll be other guys like that in the future where we, you know, build relationships and team up on stuff. But, you know, I always want it to be my baby, if you will. And, I've never, you know, it started out of a passion as a hobby that's grown into so much more than that. So, but that's never my intention and I can't ever see it changing.
Hopefully, brother, in the future, we've discussed many times about working together, somehow merging your worlds and my worlds. I think that would be really interesting. That would be an exciting thing because I feel like you know, and there are not many people out there who can really advise, you know, the person at the other end reading the post where to go and what to get, you know, like I think the watch world is changing. And I mean, like, I'm sure you've taken notice of this as well, but you know, obviously all the watch boutiques are more in-house now. They're not, you're seeing less and less of retailers. And I think it's good for the brands, but I don't know if it's necessarily good for the consumer, because the personal connection is no longer really there. You know, you don't feel that. You feel there's almost a disconnect, because they're like, you know, they're there to sell you the watch. And there's some people who are definitely very passionate in these boutiques who know what they're doing. But for the most part, man, I feel like these boutiques could be replaced with vending machines even.
Yeah, it's funny, man. I mean, I hear you 110%. This is very much a business-driven decision, and it's definitely not good for the consumer, because as the brands vertically integrate, you know, that puts more pricing power in their hands. And I certainly can understand their reasons for doing so. But I think you've seen it. Of course, the trend is away from multi-brand retail model, although they still exist. But the trend now is in favor of and in the direction of the mono brand boutiques. And so that's really powerful. I think that's, you know, it's been unfolding for a number of years now, 5 years, 10 years, but it's very pervasive right now. And it's, you know, it's a little bit, I don't know if disruptive is the right word, but it's a changing dynamic in the industry. And, you know, certainly you understand it more than anyone else, having you know, been in a multi-brand boutique type of role. So it's really interesting, and we could I'm sure carry on in detail about that at some point. It'd be really interesting.
I think we need to have part two for that. That's its own show. Now, if you could, what watch do you wear every day, so the listeners can know?
Yeah.
What watch do you wear every day that you love, that you know you just can't get enough of, and number one, and number two, if money was no object, what watch would you love to own, and why?
Oh, that's such a tough question, man. Well, the first one's easy. I mean, right now I'm wearing an Omega Seamaster Planet Ocean, the 45mm version, and I've got it on a James Bond style NATO strap. So that's my daily wear. Just a, you know, an all around solid timepiece. I'm a huge fan of George Daniels, and for those of you who don't know, you know, he invented the coaxial escapement, which this kind of gets into a little bit more of the watch history and kind of inside baseball. But so I love George Daniels. So this watch has, of course, Omega has adopted the coaxial escapement. So I love that. I love the look of the watch, and it's just a great everyday wear for me. So that's my daily wear. It's like, you know, a watch guy like me, I'm sure you're the same way. It's like, I mean, I fall in love with so many watches. every time I see a new one, I'm like, oh, I've got to have this watch or that watch. But
it becomes a love affair, man.
Yeah, it's terrible. Let's see. Let me think if I can maybe just pick one or two favorites.
And that could include vintage as well. I mean, it doesn't have to be brand.
Yeah, and I'm not a big vintage guy, actually, but I will say I'm a Hublot fan. I'd like to have a Hublot one day, you know, an F1. They're a little bit big for my wrist, but I do like their watches and just the, you know, the whole Hublot culture and what they stand for. So, you know, that's a watch I like.
And then from the super complicated, like the D. Bethunes or the MB&Fs or, you know, any of those, you know, really, really super high-end ones?
Yeah. You know, I like Christophe Clairet. He does a lot of minute repeaters. He does some really far-out watches. But he did a really cool minute repeater earlier this year. I like that. I'm not too big on some of the real alternative, like the Uhrwerks, the MB&Fs. Make some really cool watches. I don't know that they're for me necessarily, although I'm really intrigued by them. I do like Grubel 4C. They make some amazing pieces, you know. And there you go. You know, you can drop $500,000 or $1 million right there.
There you go.
But they're amazing watches. I mean, I met Stephen Force earlier this year, and he was showing me them, and just like, I mean, the care and time that goes into those watches is amazing. And I like Armin Strom.
Yeah, Armin Strom is
money really, or no object.
Yeah, Armin Strom is cool. Okay. And even I have to say, there's that other brand that I love, that the guy that was a watchmaker for Patek. What is the name?
Laurent Ferrier, or
yes, Laurent Ferrier. I think Laurent Ferrier makes an amazing watch.
Yeah. I was totally bummed because I was supposed to meet with those guys at Baselworld, and as you know, it's like the schedules are crazy. You're running from door to door, and whatever happened, they got stacked up, and so I wasn't able to meet with him. So I don't really know that brand that well. You know, I've seen their watches, and you're just like, wow, these are incredible pieces, the finishing, everything, and.
That reminded me of when, you know, F.P. Journe first came out. You know, that sort of very classic design, very simple, but yet very complicated. I think as I'm getting older, I don't know about you, but I'm definitely, like, I'm getting so basic in my taste that I don't even want a date on my watch. Like, yeah. My daily wear is a PAM 372 47mm 1950 watch. In steel, and it's two hands and four numbers and indices. And,
nice.
And, you know, that's as basic as I want to get. But I definitely do see, you know, I do appreciate the higher-end stuff for sure. I do appreciate the innovation. I like people who push the envelope. I like people who are not afraid to think outside the box. And I think, you know what, Kyle, you and I are in a very – we're very fortunate to be in such an incredible industry. We really are. It's
– I feel very fortunate, man, and you know, I'm glad our paths have crossed, and we're, you know, able to meet earlier this year, and that's what it's all about, you know, building relationships and just sharing in watches and all that they stand for, and it's just I love it, man. I love it.
Me too, man. And you know what, Kyle, I want to thank you today for, you know, shedding some light for my listeners all over the world, you know, to get into the watch business, to get it from a true gentleman and true professional and expert that you've become. I wish you nothing but continued success with Perpetuel. I really hope we get together and we're able to work together at some point and have more than one drink. You know, rock on, man.
Let's do it again, and we'll catch you soon, man.
You're very kind. Thank you, Kyle. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was my one-on-one interview with good friend and contemporary Kyle Stultz from Perpetuel. You can check out his website at www.perpetuel.com. I really appreciate him doing this. I recorded that episode about 8 months ago, so a lot has changed in the last 8 months, but nevertheless, really good content, very relevant stuff. Great interview. I look forward to doing it again. I'd also like to thank Shalvoy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the music to this podcast. If you want to know what I'm doing and see what I'm up to, you can follow me on my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. You can also check me out on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.